Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Zayin, and we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beit, right at the bottom. So we've been talking about takanat for tikkun olam, various takanot. We got there, of course, because of the issues of the takanat olam that have to do with Gittin, and those were the takanot of having the chatima on the get, was the most recent one. And that was the chatima of not being mevatel a get after you send the get, or the chatima, the takana of not being mevatel a get, or the takana of not being mevatel an edus, where there was, you had told a number of people to be made. All of those cases led us to discuss other issues that are not directly nagea gitin, and of course, one of the most powerful ones was prusbel. That was the last thing that we had dealt with, was the sugya of prusbel as a takona. So my prusbel, so what exactly would we mean by the word prusbel? Because, I mean, that is certainly not a Hebrew word, and it's become somehow or other meaningful to us, as particularly this document that we call the Mesir of the Shtarot, or the Mesir of the Chovot, to Beit Din. Where'd we get that from? How did we take the word prusbel and use it for something that doesn't, I don't know, relate specifically to a Greek word, prusbel? So my prusbel. Omer of Chisda, and remember that whenever we ask that kind of question, it's always a artificial etymology, in a sense. But in reality, remember that Chazal see embedded in all languages elements of Lashon HaKodesh from which they draw from. And therefore, they're not all that makbid of importing a term that can be understood directly in terms of either Lashon HaKodesh or Aramit and so on, and use it as if it means that particular thing. Many, many terms like that where we read into the term very cutely. One of the cutest, of course, we've spoken about is Kapandria, which is basically a shortcut and which means an entire sentence, you know. Adamafaknabai, instead of my going this way, instead of Adamakifna, instead of going around the block, Afikubahai, Kapandria. Anyway, so over here, what is a prusbel? My prusbel. Omer of Chisda, a prusbel is pros buli ubuti. Now, okay, what does that mean? So pros, as we're going to see, means a way of making things better. It actually is a word for takana. Exactly. So then that would mean, what exactly are buli and buti? Well, buli is a remez to rich people. Where do we see that? It says, Vishavarti gonuschem, and Rabbi Yosef explains that that refers to the bulaot shebiyuda. These are like the rich people and the conspicuous consumers in Yehuda. So that's buli, rich people. Buti, elu ha'aniim, dechtiv ha'avet ta'avitenu. So ha'avet, the people who you are supposed to give loans to, that means bepashtus, poor people that need loans. Omele Rava la'uza. Now Rava once asked actually a person that didn't even speak Hebrew, and he heard him use the word prusbel, and he asked him, what exactly does prusbel mean that you just said? Omale pursa de milta. What it means is the takana of whatever is needed. So we use that very sweetly to turn into a specific prus, that is to say, takana for buli and buti. What's the takana for buli and buti? So this is a takana ashirim, the buli. They will not lose their money. And ultimately, of course, it was a takana for buti. And that would be that there shouldn't be a difficulty in their getting loans. And we understood, and we saw this before, remember, very interestingly, in the introduction, really, to this whole sugya, which had nothing to do with it. And nonetheless, we saw the fascinating idea that there could be a concept of, in order to allow loans to be available, remember, we had the sugi about all of the kohanim or necha that you should take their truma to pay up for this kohen that used the truma as a way of his getting a loan that he wouldn't have to pay back, because you could take the truma in the future, or the levium for the miser, or the aniyim for the money that you're going to keep for miser rishon. So that's the same kind of idea, that we want to do something that is ultimately beneficial to the aniyim, even though you'll say, okay, but I mean, lamaisa, what this means is that the ani who makes a loan is going to have to pay back the loan, and he can't get it batal on Shemitah, which is such an important part of how the Torah HaKadosh was maybe a Yeshua to aniyim. Nonetheless, that this is ultimately litovat aniyim. There's a very interesting question about this entire issue that is nogea our understanding of this tova laniyim lashirim. Remember that we said yesterday that if this is a takona of Hillel, and it's actually a takona for Deres, so in that case, what would we be talking about that we could be mevatel this takona if it's Godol Hemenu b'chokhmo b'minyan? But that's a big problem, because that's not true. A takona that was already made in order to be mechazek the Gidrei HaTorah, which is poshat b'chol Yisrael, says the Rambam, once it's poshat, then there's no way even for a bezin that's Godol Hemenu, because it's basically an increase in the dinim of the Torah that have been accepted by Yisrael. And once Yisrael accepts it, so how can you go and be mevatel it? Now it's not a function of Bezdin any longer. And many ask this on the Rambam, because the Rambam brings this as the takana, and it was a takana l'deres of Hillel, and yet we say that it would be possible to be mevatel it with the Bezdin Godol. How is that possible? It's a very interesting approach to the issue in the Rambam, which is that where the takana is an increase in the borders of what it is that the Torah has defined, so then that is considered to be a takana that you cannot be mevatel, because now it's the fact that you've expanded the dinim of the Torah. Over here, even though it's called a takona, and it's l'tevas, both of the ashirim and the aniyim, but you cannot view it as an expansion of the Yisuri HaTorah Adarabah. It's a restriction, because it's a constriction, I should say, on the Dinei HaTorah. And therefore, the Rambam has no problem with this, because the whole theory behind the idea that you cannot actually be mevatel takona for the Chizuk HaTorah, not just because it helps the Torah be mekuyam, which is why we call it a takana, but it's because of the fact that it changes the boundaries of the Torah, and over here it constricts it. It's not marchim. This thing is a beautiful point that's kedai to consider. Okay, in any event, so we have over here what is definitely a takana. I just want to point out the differences between the way we would view this takana and the way we view other takanas. It's fascinating, because we still call it obviously a takana for the teva of both of the Ashirim and the aniyim. Omer Yehuda Omer Shmuel, you should know that yitomim ain't tzrichim prusbal. V'chein tani rami barchoma, yitomim ain't tzrichim prusbal. So let's say you have children that inherited a chov of their father, and there's karka, and this would normally mean that the shibud would have to be paid back by the yitomim. But in this case, they don't have to. Why is that without a prusbal? Because it's very simple. Since Rebbe Gamliel u Beit Dino are aviyam shel yetomim, now obviously we're just using this as a marshal for any generation, but the Bezdin that takes responsibility for appointing the apotropisin over yetomim to see to it that they're well taken care of, so then that means that for all intents and purposes, it's already a prusbal, because the whole point of the prusbal was to give it over into the authority of the Bezdin, and therefore not to be personally over on the lo yigos. But yitomim are always in the hands of the Bezdin, and therefore it's as if there's a prusbal that's written. So memela, in order to protect them, no need to write a prusbal. Tnanhat, ein kotvim prusbal ela al hakarka ve'imein lo mizakeo betoch sadeo koshu. So a prusbal can only be written if there is real estate that would have made it possible to collect this debt. Now there's a big machlokas rishonim. Remember, we mentioned earlier whether the din of a milva shebal peh, and a milva shebal peh is not a milva that's collectible from Mishu'ubadim. Fine. Still collectible. So now the question is, what about if the person doesn't have any karka? And if the person doesn't have any karka to collect from, there's two problems. Number one, we can't point to something in particular that is in the hands of Beis Din. What are you going to do? You're going to have to hire still a private detective agency to find out whether this guy has ever buried some diamond rings or something in his backyard. I mean, what in the world is the Beis Din's ability to collect the loan going to be worth if there's nothing to collect it from? And therefore, the principle no longer is useful because it's an exercise in futility if there is no real estate. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it, which is the way Rashi understands it, is that we only made the takona of the principle like all takonas derabbanan, we only make it on a davar hashchiach. And since most people will not make a loan where there's nothing to collect from, so because of that, it's not shchiach and rabbanan never mutakin a principle if there's no karka. That makes tremendous differences lahalacha, exactly how we understand the svara, but we'll talk about that when we go into more deeply into the inyanim of the principle, as I told you we were going to do when we start looking into the Mishnah itself, which all of the Mishnayos the Gemara is going to bring, actually, in the context of this sugya, as we'll see. So what can you do? What you can do is, if you have lent money, and you've lent money to somebody who does not have karka, you want to write a principle, and you're not in the hands of the Beis Din, you know, so that again, for Yisomim to be able to collect their father's debt, I said it backwards before. If we were talking about Yisomim, they're collecting the debt, not paying the debt. So the Yisomim who want to collect their father's debt, they don't need a principal. But what you can do, if the guy doesn't have any karka, is you can give him karka. So you're mezakeh him a little bit of karka in that you own, and you say, I'm giving this karka to so-and-so. And there, you now have so-and-so has karka to collect from. I mean, it's a little iffy. Let's talk about the iffiness of it. It's not clear how you could be maknaim that karka. That's a whole discussion. But the biggest iffiness of it is, well, how can you be mezakeh someone karka where it's not for his benefit? It's to his detriment. If you're mezakeh him karka, and that way you're going to be able to collect your loans from him, well, the whole idea of Zochin L'Adam Shelo B'Fanav is because we're sure that he would be happy for you to do him this big favor. Why would he be happy for you to give him, as we're going to see, a 2-cent piece of karka in order for you to collect a $2 million loan? I mean, that's crazy. You know, so some learn that that's goof a part of the dinim of principle. This is not part of the normal halacha, obviously, of Zochin L'Adam Shelo B'Fanav. And the principle included a specific takana that in order for principle to be applicable, even in places where a person doesn't own karka, so memela, we gave a new kayach of zechia. It's a tremendous kula, obviously. We don't have any real mechanism for it. And it's part of the whole way that the principle is looking at the dinim of a shmita, bisman hazeh, which is the rabbanan, and the takana of hilal, and so on and so forth. Okay, fine. That's one way of learning it. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up is because there is an amazing shita of the Ran on this issue, which has given rise to a tremendous, tremendous yeshiva shetera and the ktsois and the nesivas and how this would work and so on. So that the Ran says that it really doesn't matter whether the ultimate idea is that it's for your benefit and therefore requires you to be that we have an umdana about your das. Of course you would want this to happen. It's a din in the etzem kinyanim in which giving something is by definition zechia. It doesn't matter whether the ultimate impact of the thing is for the good or for the bad, which has a lot of implications about the way kinyanim work and so on, you can imagine. But anyway, so this is a big machlokas rishonim. How does this work? But nonetheless, this is the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Beferish, you can be mezakeh him with karka. And it could be even a small amount of karka. Kolshu, a little bit. It does not have to be worth the entire value of the loan that you're going to collect. So again, according to Rashi, that makes sense. Because basically, we're just talking about a theoretical type of norm. That's all we're trying to do, because Rashi says, look, the whole idea is ultimately that in a davar de lo shchicha, the rabbanon don't make a takana. The other way of learning it, according to many of the other Rishonim, that has to do with the question of whether it's collectible. I mean, wouldn't it need to be literally collectible? Okay, so according to that, it is literally collectible, because we said before, remember, where we were talking about what is considered to be collectible, we said even if we have a tiny little piece of property, theoretically that's called collectible. Why? Because if the person buys it back from you, remember the Katina Dabaye that we brought before, right? So the Katina Dabaye was the case where somebody had something that was worth 50% of the debt of that his father owed, which confused me before, but I'm really sorry for confusing you. And the guy went ahead and collected that 50%, and then they felt so bad at losing the family property that they went and they bought it back from the guy who had collected it, and then he went and collected it again for the other 50%. So theoretically, if somebody's going to buy back the karka, it can always be recollected. So that means that even from 2 cents worth of karka, you can theoretically collect a $2 million loan. So that would be the way in which we could learn it in the karka in terms of the collectability for Beis Din, if we're not going to take Rashi's approach that we're just looking for norms. Okay, so therefore, what do we mean when we say a koshu? A koshu? A koshu means enough space to grow a Brussels sprout. I don't know. A filu kelach shel kruv. I mean, the bottom line is that we said before the idea of like a machat, you know? Kelach shel kruv. Oh, my Rav Yehuda, you know, if you lent the guy the right to put up a pizza oven outdoors on your karka, that hash'alah itself is sufficient to be called karka. Again, obviously a new kula of prusbel, of course, but even that is kotvinal of prusbel. You can write a prusbel on the fact that you had lent him his right to use it is considered to be a actual ownership of real estate, even though it's only for this purpose. Aini? Vatani Hillel? Look at this question. Hillel said, this is, by the way, not Hillel Hazaken. This is Hillel the Amora who brought the Braita. So, Vatani Hillel. Ein kotvi prusbel, ela alatzitz nakuv bilvat. So let's say you own a flower pot, and it has a hole in the bottom. So then it's considered to be mechuber to the karka, and therefore it's as if you owned karka. By the way, remember that we were wondering earlier, and I mentioned to you that Reb Shloimeh Zalman had the whole shaila about this, whether the karka in a flower pot that is nokuv, the karka itself, is that considered to be mechuber to karka? Or only what's growing in it is considered to be mechuber to karka? That was nogea, whether you would be allowed to plant in a flower pot on Shvias, right? Because if the ground itself is not mechuber l'karka, so then you're not doing avodas hakarka. So could you do harisha? What things can you do? Can you soften the karka and things like that? Okay, so he was noted to say that it's not considered to be. Here we're talking about if it has nuts, it's nakuv, it's mashma, that the karka itself is considered to be yours because that karka is mechuber l'karka. But, I mean, the easy way out of this is that when it's talking about an atzitznakov, it's talking about a plant in an atzitznakov. And a plant is considered to be the ownership of karka, as we're going to see. If you own a tree, so then you own the karka too, and therefore it isn't really very relevant to that question about Shemitah. Okay, but you see from here that the Braita says, dafkavitz nakuv. If it isn't nakuv, then it's not going to work as a prusbel, right? But I don't understand. If a pizza oven works, why wouldn't a flower pot work? I mean, you're telling me that you only need to have given him the right to put his pizza oven there, and now you're telling me there's some kind of fundamental difference between a pizza oven and a flower pot? I mean, so why wouldn't he have the right to utilizing the space for his flower pot? And you said utilizing space is good enough to write a prusbel on. So I don't understand. And it makes no difference if it's a nakuv or ain't a nakuv, am I? What about the place? We're talking about over here is that the flower pot is not on the ground. The flower pot has these little pins that are extending from the pot, and they're put down on the ground, but you don't have the actual mokum of the ground. Now the question is, well, what about the pins? Because after all, if we said it's enough for a machat, we said before, remember, even if you've got a machat, you'd be allowed to get a whole hatchet worth, was the way that we put it in the Gemara. So what about the pins themselves? So sometime, maybe it's talking about that the pins belong to the guy who owns the karka. I don't know. Others say that for some reason a pin is bottle to the flower pot, and therefore it's not considered to be a choshev usage of the ground. Okay. I'm just pointing out that all of this has to be taken into consideration if we're really going to understand what it means to be mezakeh someone in karka. Rav Ashi, makne legidma dedikla, Rav Ashi once had a stump of a decal of a palm tree that he had cut down, and he was mezakeh that. And based on that, that you can use or give you my palm tree stump, he wrote a principle on the whole loan. Rabbana devei Rav Ashi, Masri milayu ladod. Now this is fascinating. So the Rabbanan, they would, in the Beis Medrash, they would get together a couple of the guys so that they made a bezdin, you know, like we do for Ataras Nadarim, you know, Erev Rosh Hashanah. So we get together the guys, and they would say the Lashon of the Prusbo. Mosrani Lechem, you know, Joe and Jerry, Mosrani Lechem, there's all of my debts so that I can collect it. And they relied on that. Now, the question is, you can't really do this normally. You can only do it in a yeshiva. But the reason you can only do it in the yeshiva is because they are baki in the actual meaning of the prusbel. But if you would try to do this somewhere else, then it would be inappropriate. The Rambam's lashon on the sugya is like this: Tamid chachamim shelvu ze et ze umosar dvorav letalmidim veomer lehem mosrani lechem shekochov sheyesh li shagvenu kozmar. Why is that? Mipnei shehem yodim sheashmatat kesafim bezman hazeh midivrayim ubedivorim bevad initches. But a normal person, the prusbel has a psychological value, because to him he doesn't understand how it is that this is working. What happened to Shemitah? So Talmid Chachamim, they understand the mechanism, and therefore it makes sense to tell what. What do I need a contract for? But to someone who doesn't understand the dinim of Shemitah, so the whole thing looks like a big fake out, you know. But if you've got this fancy contract and it's got all of these pretty ribbons attached to it, you know, and it's, wow, this is like, whoa, now I understand, okay? So for them, we were mitakein that you should actually have a shtar. But theoretically, what would we need a shtar for? Moses Shtarosa LeBesdin. Obviously, a guy could walk into Besdin and be Moses Shtarosa. So then Lechore should be able to do the same thing, if, especially according to those who learned that the Prusbel actually works in that fashion, which like Rashi buys into. And then, okay, so once happened that Rabbi Yonatan, he actually did this, and he did it with Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, and then he asked Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Tzarich Timidei Achrine, do I need anything else? Like, so do I have to write this up? Do we need to get it signed or whatever? No. Omele lo tzarichas. No, you certainly do not. Tone Rabbana, in lo karka, how about if the person who took the loan doesn't have any karka, but he has a guarantor? And the guarantor does have karka. Vila arev yeshlo karka. That's good enough. Because since ultimately the land of the arev is available for collection, so then it's katrin alav prusbel. How about if neither of them have any karka? Lo, vila arev, ein lehem karka. But somebody owes them, it's about locus, whether this is good enough even if somebody owes the arev. Fine. But somebody owes the lova, or owes the Arev money. So that person has karka, which means that ultimately you'd be able to collect that karka for the chov of the love, and then you as the malve would be able to collect from the property that was collected by him from the third party, right? So in that case, it's good enough for a prusbel. Why? Even though right now he doesn't have anything. Because of Shibuda de Reb Nosson. Remember what Shibuda de Reb Nosson is? The Tanya. Rabbi Natan Omer. Minayin anoshe bechavero mon vechavero bechavero. Minayin shemotzi im izemenotim lazeh. So as we've talked about so many times, if A owes B and B owes C, then actually all of the direct payments of A are considered to be in the hands of C, and he could collect them directly. How do we know that? That's called the shibud of the Reb Nosson, which is transferred to the ultimate lien holder, so to speak. Talmud lomar v'natan la'asher ashamlo. So when you're going to pay back, you're going to pay back to the person that the other person was mechuyev, and therefore we can use that for a principle too. Tanan hatam. So the other Mishnah, actually this was the opening of our last parak that we learned, Hashvit bishameta talmilva bein bishtar bein shelo bishtar. So there it would be a complete shmita. Rav Shmuel Darma Tarvayu. When we say that shvius is mishamet, we're talking about a shtar. What type of shtar do we mean? We're talking about a shtar or not a shtar means either with a shtar that has achrayut nechasim in it, and shelo bishtar means a shtar that does not have achrayut nechasim, and for sure it's going to cancel anything that was just done orally. That's for sure. So we're talking about two dargas of the shibud, the level of shibud. Well, that doesn't prove anything. It lets you let go, throw it up in the air, and then I don't understand. I thought you were preparing for a wedding here. No, that's that you call preparation. No.
I'm drawing the old cup.
Never fails. Don't start up. Misha Gadol Nimcha. Okay. So, the two ways of understanding it is the difference between a shtar that mentions beferish, that this gives me the right to collect even from something that was sold, which provides the lien, or even if it doesn't say that I have a right to collect from something that was sold. And certainly a milva alpeh, I don't have to even talk about. That's how Rav Shmuel understand the Mishnah. Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, they both say that when it says in the Mishnah ashtar, it means even a shtar that doesn't have beferish achrayas nechasim, because anyway achrayas nechasim is included, and shelo bishtar means even a milva alpeh. But if it's a shtar that actually beferish mentions that there is a shibud on a piece of property, then shvius is not mishamet, because that's as if it was already collected, because you have a lien on that piece of property that is defined, then the shvius will not be mishameted. And we have a braita that actually learns, like Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, shtar chov mishamet, v'im yesh bo achrayut nechasim eino mishamet, ha? How do you like that? There's another braita that also says the same thing. Tanya Yida. Siyem lo sadeh achat balvato. Suppose you actually made an apotike. You defined the loan is collectible from this piece of property. You explain the piece of property. You give its legal description. And there's no further necessity to go through an assessment process and all of this. You gave it to him instead of the loan. So that for sure is not Mishami, because it's considered to be already in his rishas. But not only that, even if you just made the normal general statement, which is the way in which we describe in a contract, it's almost like, you know, automatic. That you say, kol nechasai achraim varavaim lecha, and so on and so forth. It's like what we write in the ksuva even. So everything that I own is mishubah to repayment, even that, which is very general, and I didn't provide a specific definition of a specific lien on a specific property, even that would be enough that it's considered to be eino mishamet. So now a fascinating thing happened. A relative of Rav Asi had a shtar of money that was owed to him, and it said beferish in this shtar, all of my property is mishu'ubat. So he comes and he asks Rav Asi, this cousin of his came and asked him, so mishamet o eno mishamet? I need to know, like, this shtar, is it enough to make it that it's not mishamet? And I collect it. And he said, yeah, ain't no mishamet. No, for sure. Since it says in the shtar that you have a chayes l'chasim, there's no problem. So then he went and checked it out with Rabbi Yochanan. So Shafke v'aser l'kami to Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan said, no, it is mishamet. So he went back and told his cousin, well, you say it's not mishamet. I went and asked Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says it is mishamet. Rav Asi was totally floored. So he comes running to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi, what's going on? Omar Leh, is this mishamet or any mishamet? Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, it is mishamet. But Rabbi, you were the one who said it's not mishamet. That's what you said together with Rish Lakish. That is vada, not mishamet. That's how you explain the Mishnah, right? Omar Leh, Rabbi Yochanan said, because I have a great imagination about how to explain a Mishnah, so therefore I should paskan halacha based on my imagination. This was the lashon we had before from Rabbi Yochanan. I'm going to go take money away from somebody, which many rice he doesn't own, because it seems to me that this is the correct shot in the Mishnah. You got to be crazy. I never heard that this is the halacha from my Rebbe. Well, I'm not going to rely on my own imagination. But Rav Asi says to him, but we bought two prices to prove that you were right. But Tanya Kavasidamar, Omar Leh, you can't bring a raya from a brighter for this. I'll tell you why. Because we know that Beit Shammai, remember, has a very special shita. We had this right back in Saita a little while ago. And I'm not sure that this was not stated, these prices. That maybe they were stated, I'll leave it to Beit Shammai. Namely, remember that Beit Shammai Shita is Shtar HaOmed Ligbot Kigavui Dami. So what that would mean is, remember when it came to the Saita, the situation was like this. She was about to drink from the Mesota, and then her husband died. So she couldn't drink. So now the question is, can she collect her ketuvah? You remember that machlokas? So Beit Shammai said that actually, she can collect her ketuvah. Why? Because since it's a suffix now whether she lost her ketuvah because she committed adultery or not, but she's the one who's considered to be muhzeket in the money. And the children now of her deceased husband, they're considered to be amotzi mechaver ol varaya because she had the schus of the lien with the shtar of her ketuvah. So you see that he holds that the shtar, which could be used to collect the lien, is considered to be muhzik already in that money. So if this is said, alibi Beit Shammai, then obviously it's not going to prove anything about the shita that we paskin like. So maybe a shtar legabe a prizbal is not considered to be, legabe hashmotes ksafim, is not considered to be. I don't know. I'm simply not sure. I was never mekabel this halacha. So we have another, this is the second, that was the first Mishnah in the 10th parak, remember? That was the first halacha that we did together. The second, this is the next Mishnah in the 10th parak. Tanan Hasan. Ha'malveh et chavero ma'ot al ha'mashkon. So suppose you lent money on the guy's watch or something, or ha'moser shtarotov le'beit din in mishamtin. Again, for the same reason. But no, says the Gemara. I mean, I understand Moser b'shtarotov le'beit din. Over there, the bezdin is tov-faced the shtarot and can collect them, right? And that's therefore not considered to be a problem vis-a-vis lo yigos et reyehu. So that makes sense. But I do not understand why, because you have a mashkin, why is that enough to cancel Shemitah? Oh, my Rafa, what do you mean? Because basically you're already holding that mashkin. So Mishum the toughest way. So that means that for all intents and purposes, there's no lo yigos. You're already in possession of the money that's owed you. That's what the mashkin is. Wait a minute, says Abaya. I got a question for you because this is actually a case in Bava Metzia, okay? A guy is living in the actual yard of the person that he's lending money to. So he's actually living there. So, he was renting a place from him. So, miata. Hilvau v'dar b'chatzeiro. So, you could say that for all intents and purposes, that he already has collected the money, right? Because, he's taking his rent in the rights to take back his loan. So let's say he gave him $10,000 and he is now living for 10 years in his property in exchange for that. He's going to deduct it from the loan. So then that should be considered to be repayment because it's a mashkan. He's already there. So you're telling me, Yochi Nami de lo mishami, that happens to not be the halacha. As it says, Beferish Bab Betzia, in that case, he's not considered to have already collected the loan. So Rava says there's a big difference. That's real estate. And we're talking about a mashkin where the guy gave you his watch. And that is totally different. Why? Shiny mashkin, the konile mid Rabbi Yitzchak. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, well, I would tell Gavi to write it down, but I don't think it's a good idea while he's driving. So the Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, minayin leval chov shekone mashkin. How do we know that when you gave that watch to somebody, and he's able to use it to collect, that he is considered to be an actual owner of it? Because since the Torah says with the mitzvah, we're in a situation, remember, where the guy gave you his pajamas, that you're mechuyev to give it back to him at night. If he gave you his suit, you're mechuyev to give it back to him in the daytime. So it says in the pasuk, ulecha tiye tzedakah, that it's going to be considered as if you gave tzedakah when you bring it back to him. How could it be tzedakah if you don't have any zechus in it? You can't have zechus in something to call it tzedakah that you don't own. So it must be, since im eino konef, he doesn't have an actual kinyan in those pajamas, so then tzedakah minayin? How could it be called tzedakah? Therefore, it says Rabbi Yitzchak, Mikan the Balchov Shikone Mashkon. So that means if you're talking about metaltalin, that is different. Because over there, the Torah specifically gave you rights of Mashkon, and that's an actual Kenyan. Now, another thing that we learned, and we didn't get up to this Mishnah yet, but we will be there very soon. So towards the end of the parak, it says, Tznan Hatam, somebody who's Machzir Chov Lishchaviro Bishviyas. Suppose someone owes you money, comes and brings you the money. When it says bishvias, by the way, that's a little misleading, because if somebody brings you money in the middle of shvias, you're allowed to take it from him, because we paskin, hopefully Gavi will remember to write this down also, that shvias ena mishametet ela b'sofo, that it's the last minute of shvias that's mishamet. So if the loan is paid back during Shemitah, this is not really what the Mishnah is talking about. What it means is if right after Shemitah, so a guy comes and he's bringing you back your loan, you have a chiyuv to tell that person, it's this loan, ani mishamet. What do you mean? The Torah gave me a mitzvah. Shmot kol ba mashayado. I am definitely not seeing this as money that is coming to me because of the loan. Mishamet ani. Now, if the person who brought you the money says, FLP came, I still feel bad. I took the money from you. I want to give it back to you. I'll give it back to you as a gift, but I don't want to keep your money. Then you come in then. Then you could take it back from him. Shneamar v'zeh dvar hashmita. What do you mean by dvar hashmita? That means you need to say it. Dvar hashmita. You need to make that statement. I am mishamet. Okay, you made the statement. That's the dvar hashmita. After that, there's nothing wrong in accepting the money back from him. Omar Rabba, I got news for you. You can hang him up by his toesies until he says that. I know, I want to give it back to you anyway. No. But, you yank him up a little higher. But I want to give it back. Oh, okay, fine. So you can do that too. Abayah said to Rabbah, how can you do that? Because it says in the Braita that kishunotein lo, when the guy is paying you back, he should not say, I'm paying you back what I owe you. He should pay, I'm giving you a gift, he should say. Yomarlo, this is really my money, but I'm giving it back to you as a gift. Bimatanani notein. Now, if you hang him up by his toesies, he's telling you, okay, I want to give me back the money anyway. I mean, but then what do you do about the Braita? What's the problem, says Rabba? Once you're hanging him up by his toesies, you can also say, when the guy says, I want to give it back to you, you can say, well, that's not good enough. A little bit higher. No, I want to give it back to you because it's a gift. Oh, exactly. Okay. You can get him to say that also, you know. So, Tolei Nami, keep hanging him. Adi Amarachi, until he gives you the whole thing. Meaning the whole Lashon. The correct Lashon. No, this is not my money. You don't owe me the money. No, I don't want to give it to you as money that I owe you. I want to give you a gift. Okay. So basically, since what you're doing is you're not reclaiming a loan. So what you're doing is you're forcing a guy to give you a gift. Okay. Fine. So what? The loan itself still exists. It's the shibud of the loan and the right to collect the loan that doesn't exist. But as if what you're doing is getting back your own money, then you could still do that. And therefore, Rabbi says you could do this even l'chatchila. Now, Abba Bar Marta, otherwise known as Arba Bar Minyumi, actually owed Rabbi some money. Well, I mean, Abba Bar Marta's a nice guy. Rabbi wasn't ready to hang him up by his toesies. So anyway, he actually owed Rabbi money, and he comes after Shemitah, and he brings him the money. So Rabbi, of course, said to him, Mishametani, this is not owed me. The Torah says you don't have to pay me. Okay, so Abba Bar Marta took the money and walked off. So Rabbi was quite upset. Oh, my God. So anyway, Abaye had walked into the house, and he finds Rabbi in a very bad mood. So Rabbi is awesome. So Abaye asks him, how come you look so sad today? Oh, Marley, this is what happened. I can't believe it. The guy walked off. You know how much money he took from me? Anyway, so Abaye went to Abba Bar Marta. Rabbi was very poor. So Ozulagabe. So Rabbi goes to Abba Bar Marta and says to him, did you bring money back to Rebbe? He said, yeah, I did. So what did Rebbe say to you? He said, I'm a shamit and you don't have to pay me. Oh, okay. But of course you said to him, Afal Pike, and I want to give you the money, right? Oh, no, I didn't say that. Well, says Abai, you know, if you would have said that, I'm sure he would have been happy to accept it. So I would suggest going back and you could still offer him the money. I mean, it doesn't have to be at the same moment, you know. So he went back. Also, Amtino Niale, he went back and he told him, Vomale Afapike. So Rabbi took it from him. Then after he walked out, Rabbi said, I'm really shocked. This guy is a Talmud Chacham. He didn't have enough seichel to say that you think I can't figure out that somebody, obviously Abaye, I must have gone and gotten him to come back. He didn't have enough sense in his head in the beginning that this is what you're supposed to say. So you see from here, as the Mefarshim or Medayik, that you see from here that since Rabbah is makbid on him, that he didn't say it, that this is mamish not like stam amidas chasidus. This is the correct hanhaga. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Nachman. A person can even say when he's collecting, I had a prusbul and I lost it. And he doesn't even have to be nishba to that effect, Tosfos says. Why do we believe him? Because kivan detonu dakinu rabbanan prusbul, this is another gavi moment. Are you still driving or are you just holding your hands on the steering wheel? I'm not sure. I can't make it out. I think he's frozen. But anyway, this is an important nekuda. Lo shavik hetera va'achal isura. We rely on the fact that someone would not do something in the wrong way when he could do it in the right way. And therefore, we don't even doubt his word that he had a prusbul. It's a very interesting question about an argument that took place in the Besdin about someone who owed money on a loan that was no say rebit. So the loan, he had to pay percentages of rebit. And there was an argument between the lender and the borrower about whether they had written up a heter iska, which obviously if there's no heter iska, you can't go to a bezdin to collect ribis for you, and the whole loan is bottle, right? So the lender claimed that there was a heter iska that he had lost, and the borrower claimed there was no heter iska. So the question was whether that would be the same as lo shava ketera v'achli sura benogea the prusba from our Gemara. Okay, kiyata l'kami d'rav. Anyway, if people would come to Rav, he would actually ask them. They did not present a prusba. They came to Rav's Bezdin in order to collect. And Rav, which this sounds like leading the witness, to say the least, Rav would ask them, excuse me, but did you write out a prusba for this? Maybe you lost it? Because this is considered to be ptach picha le'ilem. Since people will generally assume that the Bezdin is not going to believe them, that they had a prusba and they lost it, so they forget about it, I won't even mention it. So because of that, the Bezdin can actually ask them, did you have a prusba and lose? Because it's so much the norm that the person, in order to be able to recollect his debt, takes 10 minutes or less to get a prusba, that it just doesn't make sense that he doesn't have a prusba. But is that really true? Doesn't the Gemara say, we had this back in Ksuvos, that a woman, over there it's talking about a woman wants to come to Bezdin for her Ksuva, and the Baal claimed that he had already paid it. And the same thing is true about a Baal Chov, who brings a Shtar Chov, and he wants to collect in the Bezdin after Shvias, without a prusba. So these are not able to be collecting in court. So doesn't that show that if the guy claims that he had a prusba and lost, that we don't believe him? We need to see the prusba. Yes, it does. You're right, 100%. But the truth is that even though this goes against what Rav and Rav Nachman said, it's not a kasha. Because it happens to be, we see no in a brisa, that this is a machlokas tanoim. And it says in the brisa, and that Rav and Reb Nachman were going according to the brisa. It says in the brisa, Motzi shtar chov, tzorech sheyemo prusbu. Whereas the chachomim omrim, eino tzorech. So since they paskim like the chachomim, they were going against the Mishnah, was going like the Tanakama here. And this brings us to a very important moment of Okay. There's another very fascinating takana. Truth is, I just wanted to hear Richie's Zog Taylor commission. I didn't want to really learn the mission. Ha ha, Richie. But what I did want to do is to, again, at least to start our Mishnayos and Shvias. Now, since we've learned today in the Gemara the Mishnayos in Shvias, so I just thought it would be a grand way to get back into these halachas. So if we just, I'm going to read to you over again. We did this already, but just to get back into it, to read from the last parak we were in, parak Yud, and I'm going to start from Mishnah Gimel, which we just read in our Gemara. Prusbo eno mishamet, ze echad min hadvarim sheitkin hilel hazakein, kishira'a shenimnu'u ha'am milahalvot ze et ze, ve'ovrim ha'ma shekatuv batorah yishomer lecha. So this was the first Mishnah that the Gemara had quoted. The next Mishnah, Mishnah Dalet, again, we've done this already in Shvias, and we just reviewed it in the Gemara, but I want to, you know, just be koveya as part of the Masechet to once again finish up this perek. Zeu gufa shel prusbo. Moser ani lachem, ish ploni uploni. Adayanim shebemakom ploni. You remember the whole discussion, whether each ploni or ploni that we just had in the Gemara means you only need two, or whether the Tana is supposed to go and be keruchla, daya ploni, ploni, ploni. Fine. Shekolchov, sheyeshli, sheegvenu kol zman sheeretze, vadayanim chotmin lamata, o haedim. And again, we just discussed this in the Gemara. What would that mean, adayanim o haedim? Remember, we had the Rambam's pshat and the Pirsha Mishnayis, that from here we learned that Eid Nasa Dayan in the Inyan of the Prusbel, and the other Rishonim simply say it doesn't matter whether you're Chotem as Ani Ploni Ben Ploni Eid, or you're Chotem as the Dayan. It makes no difference. Even if it was originally written in a Lashon of Eidim, that we were two Eidim and so came before us, and then you sign it Dayan, or we were Dayanim and so came to our Beis Din, and you sign it as Eid. In all cases, it would be kosher. The next Mishnah, which is Mishnah Hay, which we had also done, and which we just reviewed. Oh, actually, we haven't reviewed it yet. So let's do that. Okay, so this is the Mishnah before the Mishnah that we just did about Ein Kotvin Prusbel El Al HaKarka. So this was the Mishnah that we had done, and I'll review. Prusbel HaMugdam Kasher VaMuchar Pasul. Remember that the Prusbel works only on those things that were owed at the time that you write the Prusbel, right? But if you write that Prusbel, let's say 2 months before the end of Shemitah, and then you make new loans, the Prusbel is not going to help you. Because the Prusbel is only if you're Moser the Shtara, so to speak, you're Moser the Choyveis to Beis Din that you had, but you didn't have this Chov at that time. So therefore, if you predate the Prusbel, the only person that you're hurting is yourself. Because now you're not going to be able to use the Prusbel to collect the loans that you're going to make afterwards. So even though you predated it, since you didn't hurt anyone but yourself, we don't passel a shtar that you didn't do any harm with. But if you wrote the Prusbel to a later date, that is a fake shtar, and because of that, as a knas, the Chachomim canceled the entire validity of that Prusbel. And therefore it's puzzle. You can't use it even from the date that we know that it actually was meant to be written with. The exact opposite is the case when it comes to the actual contract of the loan. Because the loan, remember, creates a lien on your property that the person will be able to collect from the time of the loan. And therefore, if you predate it, it's going to look like there's this lien that he had a right to collect from before he had a right to collect from it. And therefore, if someone else was going to collect from that, and this guy comes along and says, well, I'm sorry, I had the lien before you, you're going to be stealing from that person. And therefore, if it's predated, it's possible, totally possible. You can't use it to collect from Mishu'ubadim at all. Whereas if it's Mu'uchar, the only person that you hurt is yourself. Because what you've done is basically, you've made it that he cannot, actually, you cannot collect from anything that he sold before that date, even though you had a right to. So you're just hurting yourself. Now, in a case where one person borrows from five different people, every one of those people has to have a Prusbel. And they're Kotev Prusbel Kol Echad V'Echad. But if you have five people that are borrowing from one person, we only need one Prusbel because that one person can use that Prusbel to collect Kol Chovot Sheyeshli, even from five different borrowers. And the next Mishnah, which we just read, Ein Kotvin Prusbel Ela Al HaKarka. We only write up, it's amazing to see like the whole, basically, all of the dinim we just had here in our sugya. Ein kotvin prusbel ela la karka, any main law. How about if the borrower doesn't have any karka? Mizakehu betok sadeu kol shehu. Suppose there was some karka that was owed him in this area, which is lavdafka. It says be'ir, haitalo sademu mushkenet be'ir. That money is due to him. So haitalo. Sadem mushkenet beir, kotvim alav prusbel. Rabbi Chutzpi says, you can even write kotvim leish al nechse ishto, leyatomim al nechse apotropi. So this is a tremendous kula. You could even write, the Baal has a right only to peros, right? So if he has the rights to peros on his wife's nechse malug, for the kula of Prusbel, we allow that to be viewed as property that is recoverable. And even if the apotropos was the court-appointed, steward over a trustee over these yesenim, and he has property, even though his property is not the property you collect from in the loan, when he takes out the loan for the benefit of the yetomim, so then you can use that to write, even though he didn't take the loan for himself. There's a special takana of prisbo, which is to be make letova to aniim, and we consider this to be the equivalent of a prisbo that you can write on, even though it's not really collectible from that. So, we were talking about the various takanas, and we moved on from Gittin, all of the various takanot that have to do with Gittin, and we talked about prisbo. Now we have another takana, which is that an eved shenishba ufata'u, im l'shum eved yishta'abed, v'im l'shum ben chorin lo yishta'abed. Okay, here a Yisro owns an eved k'nani, goyim come, and they steal him. And now, what's the din? They put him up for a ransom. So if somebody rents out, it's this very unclear Mishnah. We're going to see that we have to get into all kinds of machlokas and to figure out what the Mishnah is exactly talking about. Im l'shum eved yishta'abed. So if he was ransomed in order to be an eved, so then he can remain an eved. But if people pay for him to be a ben chorin, then he should not be mishu'ubad. Now this is very unclear. Are we talking about that the original owner is not miyayish on him? So just because the goyim stole him, so somebody else pays for him to be free, so now he doesn't go back to the original owner? Why would that be? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel omer, and here comes again, we have the takona, in which Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, and actually, ben kach, he should be mishta'abed. Now we'll see what this has to do with a takana over here. So, b'mayaskina. So first of all, let's figure out what the case is. I mean, are we talking about that the original owner was never miyayish on him? So if he was never miyayish on him, what difference does it make if somebody comes along, pays for him to be a ben chorin, but, I mean, the owner never freed him, and he owns him. So how in the world could this have to do with the intent of the person who paid for him? So it's got to be talking about, maybe, ma'achar yish? And then why did we say that if he buys him l'shem eved, he should be mishta'abed, assuming that what that means is that he goes back to the original owner? And that's what we're assuming. I mean, if that's what it means, why should he go back to it? He basically had already lost them. And Yush is the equivalent of Hefker. If he'd been Mafker the Eved, so then it's not his. So no matter how you learn it, it doesn't make sense. Omer Abayas, we have two basic approaches. Abaya learns that the Mishnah is talking about actually Lifnei Yush. And the reason that we say L'shum Eved Yishta'abed, that means yishtabed to the original owner, because it's lifnei yiush. So that's exactly why he's mishtabed. And it doesn't matter whether the guy that paid the money wanted to give him back to the original owner, wanted to keep him for himself or whatever, he's still owned by the original guy. And therefore, says Abaya, give him back. When it says that he was lushum eved, that's fine. What about if he was bought back L'shum ben chorin? So lo yishtabed, that means at all. He's not meant to be used if he was mishubad l'shum ben chorin, not by the original owner, and not by this, so to speak, the guy, the second guy, meaning the guy that paid for him. So why would that be if we're talking about lifnei yiush? That doesn't make sense. So the Rabbo Sheni, we understand why not. Because he said, I'm buying him to be a ben chorin. So then there was never any bilus that he had on him. And obviously, as Tosis points out, I mean, there's also the fundamental fact that it doesn't matter what it was that the second guy wanted. It belonged to somebody else, according to Baye, because it was before Yush. But why is he not given back to the original owner? That's the question. And it's here that we get to the issue of the takonas. The reason that we don't give them back to the first guy is because the chachamim hold, dilma min ne'ivelo parkin. If he would be given back for an eved, so then people do not feel that they have to worry about someone else's eved, that they should have to pay money to get him away from the goyim. In the same way that if somebody's cow was captured, nobody's going to go around collecting money to buy this guy's cow back for him. So the question is, if we would give him back, since it's talking about lifnei yihush, according to Abaye, and if you would pray to him, we would give him back to the original owner, so people would say, okay, I mean, it's just an eved. And therefore, I'm not going to worry about it. But Lamaisa, the Rabbanan, are very worried about it. Because remember that an eved is chayev b'mitzvahs ke'isha. And therefore, in leaving him with the goyim, we're basically making it impossible for him to be the semi-Yisrael that he is, chayev in those mitzvahs. And therefore, people who won't do it, if we say that the guy will go free and that he's not mishtabed, then people will say, oh, okay, so if that's the case, then we will get together and we will get the money up and we'll buy him back so that he should be a total Ben Yisro. And maybe that's the point. Okay, so say if that's so, then why even if he bought it back in order that the guy should go back to the original person? So why in that case would we not say the same thing? Because over there, if the guy himself was willing to buy him back in order just to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, essentially, so then we don't have to worry that they're going to be mimni velo parke. The only time that we're worried about mimni velo parke is where we don't have the intent to give him back. Okay? That's the way Abaye understands it. And what's the basis of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's disagreement, according to Abaye? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, we do not have a chashash that people will not be paid an eved. And therefore, ben kach, yishtabed, it doesn't matter, they'll be paid to him in order to save him from the goyim, in order that he should be able to do his mitzvahs, even if he's only an eved. Why is that? Because kasava, people realize that kashem shemitzvah livdot et b'nei chorin, kach mitzvah livdot et ha'avadim. So according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, it's first of all true that I have a mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim, and an eved kenani, since he's chayev in mitzvahs, has the same mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim that Yisrael has. And memela, why do I need to make a takana? If the first odin is not miyayish, and they were paid to him, the first odin comes along and says, listen, this is my eved, I own him, and thank you very much for allowing him to be b'kayim his mitzvahs. That's all. So this is one approach. Again, according to Abaye, the machlokas between the Rabbanan and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is whether we need to make a takana to make it possible that people will get together to be paid to the Eved. The Rabbanan hold that since there's no mitzvah, or people believe there's no mitzvah to be paid to an Eved, they will not be paid to that Eved as long as he's going to go back into Shi'ibud. And according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, there's no problem. Because since there is a mitzvah to be paid on Eved, just like there's a mitzvah ben Chorin, people will get together to do the mitzvah anyway. And it doesn't matter whether he will still be mishtabed, but he'll be able to be b'kayim his mitzvahs. Rava Amar. Rava says no. I learned that the Mishnah is talking about a case over here where people are going to be paid on the Eved after the original Adon was Misyayish. And therefore, when we said, according to the Tanakhama, that Lashum Eved Yishtabed, it doesn't mean he's Yishtabed to his first Odin. That Odin lost him by being Miyayish, and that's the equivalent of Hefker. It means that the person who bought him, if he bought him for himself, actually gets to keep him. That's what it means. And if, however, the guy buys him in order that he should be a Ben Chorin, so then he is basically a Ben Chorin, and you're not allowed to work with him, not Rabbo Rishon, and not Rabbo Sheni. The Rabbo Sheni, of course, can't suddenly decide, I'm going to take him. You already paid for him to be a Ben Chorin. And the Rabbo Rishon, why should we give it to Rabbo Rishon? the Rabba Risha doesn't own him anymore because it's already Lacher Yush. So now, according to Rava, what would be the explanation of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel saying that it makes no difference whether you bought him back to be an Eved or you bought him to be a Ben Churin? Makes no difference. Of all crazy things, he goes back to the owner? Why? This is a very important takana. This is the takana that Chizkiya said was the only way to make it possible to own Avani. The Omar Chizkiya, Deimam Ru Benkach Benkach Ishta Abed. What would be the explanation of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel that he does go back to the original Adayin? How can that be if the original Adayin was Miyayish on it? Because imagine a situation where somebody owns an Eved and the Eved is angry at the owner. Or maybe the Eved has long-term resentments about the owner and he doesn't want to be owned by this guy. Well, all he would have to do is find a band of a local goyim, go over to them and say, hey, how would you like to capture me and ransom me? And that way, if they take him away, and you're going to say that, well, if the first owner is going to be Miyayish and people are going to be paying to him, then he would go free. Wow, that's a great idea for him. And anytime that he would want to get away from the owner, that's all that he had to do, right? So therefore, in order, Shlo Ye Kol Echad V'Echad Olechu Mapil Atzmo L'Gaya Sotz, the Rabbanim made a takana. In order that it should be possible for people to own Avadim, what we have to do is to make this takana that he will actually not be able to achieve anything by going ahead and giving himself over to the Gaya Sot, because we're going to give him back to the original owner. That would be the pshat. Okay, so then that means that we're learning ben kach u ben kach yishta'abed means ben kach u ben kach yishta'abed l'rabbo harishon. Even though the Gemara doesn't say this, this is how Rashi and Tosfos learn that it means that he should go back to the rabbo harishon. Because if you're going to tell me that the logic is simple, if you're going to tell me that when it says ben kach u ben kach, even if he was miyayish, he should be mishu'ubad to the guy who buys him back, which is reasonable, is it not? But the problem is that Chizkiya would still be applicable, Tainus Taisus. Because imagine a case where he is really angry at this particular owner. He can't stand the guy. So it's worth it for him, even though you'll say, well, what's he accomplishing? He is accomplishing. He's getting away from the guy that he hates. And he hopes that whoever comes along and is poda him can't possibly be as bad as this guy. So he does have what to gain, right? And therefore, we have to make the same takana, because otherwise he's going to be marviach, to be mafkia himself from that first guy. This is possible. We don't have an absolute raya that this is true. I mean, it's certainly possible, as Tosfos suggests, that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was only talking about the case where we're paid to him l'ben chorin, because just to escape from the guy and to take a chance that he'll get someone better, maybe for that we wouldn't have had to make the takana of Chizkiya. So again, to review, according to Abaye, we're talking about before Yush, and the issue, according to Abaye, is a takana to make sure that people will get money together in order to be poda an eved, because there is not a mitzvah. They believe that there's not a mitzvah to be poda an eved. And we believe that we have to make sure that he's going to be able to be mekayim mitzvahs. And therefore, we make this takana, and he should be able, indeed, to be able to get people together to be poda him. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel argues, because Reb Shimon ben Gamliel holds, there's a mitzvah, exactly the same mitzvah, and people will do it, and they're aware of it. And therefore, whatever the din was, if it's lifnei yush, and it's still owned by the original guy, then it should be given back to the original guy. That was the first approach. Rava's approach is that it's talking about li'achar yush. And therefore, he has to come up with a completely different reason why, according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the person should not be mishta'abed. And he understands that the response of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is that it's a completely new takana, which is Chizkiya's takana, and that we're worried that people will not be able to maintain control over Avodim because they have an easy way to get themselves out from under his control by giving themselves over to Goyim. Hello, here I am. Why don't you take me? Which makes it sort of easy. It's almost easier than stealing a Kia car today, you know? So if the guy is going to walk over and say, hello, here's the keys to my ignition. So obviously you're not going to be able to keep that car very long, right? These are the Evid boys instead of the Kia boys. I don't know, maybe nobody even knows about this, so I should assume amoratsis on the part of the listeners. Okay. And then we have a sub-question in that explanation of Rava as to whether when we say that he should be mishtabed, whether that means that he should be mishtabed always for the first Adin, and that's included in Chizkiyas Takana, because we want to make sure that the first Adin is not going to be taken advantage of by his Eved who doesn't like him and wants to go to somebody else, or whether we only have to worry that he's going to want to get himself freed, but he's not going to go and be mapil himself a guy asut for the smaller possibility that the new guy that buys him off of the ransoms him off is going to treat him better than the first guy. Okay, that's a sub-machlokas within the understanding of Chizkiyah. Okay, a bit complicated, but this is the machlokas that we have over here and two very different ways. Now let's go and see whether this is consistent, because in the Braita, it does not seem to make any sense the way that Rava understands it. It says in the Braita like this, Omelam Reb Shimon ben Gamliel to the Chachomim, what do you mean? Kishem shemitzvah livdot et b'nei chorin, kach mitzvah livdot et avadim. Now, what in the world does that have to do with Rava? I mean, the way Abaya understood it makes perfectly good sense. Abaya said it's talking about lifnei yush, and the reason that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says that the halacha is that you do not set him free is because people will buy him back in order for him to be mekayim mitzvahs, and you don't have to set him free. Okay, then it makes sense. But Rava holds that the reason that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was arguing was because of Chizkiyah. So how does the Braisa say that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, what should it say, according to Rava? Omar Reb Shimon ben Gamliel l'chachomim, im kein ye kol echad v'yachad ma'pil atzmo l'gayasot, right? But he doesn't. He says something totally irrelevant. Namely, k'shem shemitzvah liftaises ha-ben chur. What in the world does that have to do with anything? It's Mishum de Chizkiyahu. Why is he saying k'shem shemitzvah? True, true, true. But, says Rava, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel in the Braita is basically trying to address the Rabbanon on either basis, because he wasn't sure what the Rabbanon were talking about. So what he thought was like this, if you're talking about Lifnei Yush, and the reason that we're saying that we don't give him back to the Odin is because people are not going to be Peda and Eved, then I'm telling you my response to that. Why would people not be Peda and Eved? Kishem Shem Mitzvah Livdadad Ben Chorin, etc., etc., right? If you're talking about La'achra Yush, so then my response to you is, Im kein ye kol echad v'echad ma'pil atzmo l'gayasot, like Chizkiyah. But I don't know, so I want to make sure I want to cover all my bases. Which is a little bit strange, right? Because that means that Rava says, and I think this is very important in terms of practical psak, it means that Rava is saying that even though I would never allow myself to argue with Reb Shimon ben Gamliel the Tana, but if Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, I don't know what the Svara of the Rabbanan are, I, Rava, can say, I do know what the Svara of the Rabbanan is. I am convinced that it's because of the question of La'achra Yush, not the way you think that maybe they think. So in other words, the Machlokas, if Reb Shimon Gamliel is Misupak, so then Rava felt he had a right to say, well, I'm not Misupak, which is different than arguing directly on Reb Shimon Gamliel. Okay. So now, according to this, Rava is saying that if we're talking about La'achra Yish, the way that the Chachamim understand it, so obviously he doesn't go back to the first owner, according to the Chachamim, he goes to the second owner. Now, here's the big problem. The second owner is ransoming this Eved from Goyim. How did the Goyim have a kinyan on this Eved to be able to sell him to the second owner. You have to be kona from somebody. What do you mean? So because you paid the money, so therefore you own the eved, you didn't buy the eved from someone who owned the eved, for God's sake. So why in the world would you own the eved? Rabo Sheni Miman Konile. Who sold it? The Shaboy, the people who stole him, basically, right? So how in the world did the Shaboy Gufe Mikonile? Did the kidnappers of this eved, so they have an actual kinyan on the eved? How in the world do we get a kinyan like that just from walking off with him? I thought that goyim do not have a kinyan on avadim, as we're going to see. Answers the Gemara. They don't have a kinyan on avadim when it's a kinyan haguf. That's true. But they do have a kinyan on avadim as control of their work. That's different. So in other words, let's say that the Shaboy were actually kena the Eved for the work. Then the Eved goes ahead, runs away from them, and he now goes and becomes a ger. Okay? So what would be the din? He would be mutter as a ger. He can marry a Bas Yisrael. What do you mean? He's an Eved. He is not an Eved. He is simply someone who committed himself, so to speak, to work for someone for 20 years. So what? So even though the goy owns his work, he doesn't own his goof. And that's a completely different issue. That's what we mean when we say a goy cannot own an eved. But we're going to see from the pasuk that he can definitely own the work of that eved. Once the Jew buys that right of the kinyan of the work of this eved from the Shaboy, then it's like doing that in the beginning. How do we ever have avadim? So if we're kena an eved from the eved himself, right? Let's say a guy sells himself to you. Okay, so what makes him your eved as a kinyan haguf? The fact that you went ahead and you were toivel him l'shem avdus. So it's the etzem chalos of Eved Yisrael. The way the Rambam explains the sugya is that at the time that this Eved becomes a Jew, that means that he's now being put into the mikveh l'shem avdus. At the moment that you put him into the mikveh, it's at that point that the gerus is chal by asking him, do you willingly accept upon yourself to be ke'avde Yisrael haksherim, that are mekayim all of the mitzvahs that an eved has to be mekayim? And he says yes. So it's that itself, and the tefillah that I put him into the mikveh, that is what turns him into my eved in terms of the kinyan haguf that a Yisrael has on an eved kanani. So the same thing is true over here. Once you ransom him as a Yisrael from these shaboy, at that point, you can be matvil him again, l'shem avdus, because the original tefillah that was the ownership of the first owner, we said that he was miyayashan. Fine. But now you buy him from these people, you can now actually again be matvil him l'shem avdus. And how do we know that a goy can be kene a goy l'maisi yadav? The Omer Reish Lakish. How do we know that a goy can be kone a goy, albeit just for his maisi yadayim? Shneemar v'gam mibnei atoshavim hagarim imachem mehem tiknu. Now we have over here an extra pasuk, because the first pasuk right before this said what to do. Where are you going to get an eved ve'ama? Because you're going to say, if I have to wipe out the shiva amamim, how am I ever going to have avadim? No, says the pasuk. There's all of these people that live all around you, not from the shiva amamim, mehem tiknu eved ve'ama. And then it continues on to say, ve'gam bibnei atoshavim hagarim imachem, mehem tiknu. Now, what is that? Why do you have to say again, mehem tiknu? You just said, mehem tiknu eved ve'ama. So the repeat of the words mehem tiknu, that's telling me that atem, stressing, atem konim mehem, you can be kone them, but lo hem konim mikem, they cannot be kona you, a kinyan aguf. Velohem konim ze mize. You can be kona them. They cannot be kona each other. Now, you might think that this means they cannot be kona each other. Yocholo yiknu ze ze. What are you talking about? What do you mean? You might think they can't be kona one another. You just said they can't be kona one another. What are you saying? You might think. You're driving me nuts here. No, I mean, when it said, I said, they cannot be kona each other. What that means is they cannot be kona a kinyan aguf. Now I'm asking you, you might think that that also means that they don't even have an ability to be kona long term. The work lien on them, that whatever it is that they do belongs to me, and Maisi Yadayim belong to me. That's impossible, says the Braisa, because it's a kal v'chomer. It's a beferish a pasuk that an oved kochavim is kona a Jew for his work. That's the whole closing of Sefer Vayikra, right? What happens if somebody is sold leger, le'eker mishpachat ger, and that you're not allowed to steal him away, and you have to give the same din of pidyon, in which we count the number of years till yovel, and so on. The Torah says you have to treat that goy exactly the same, who owns a Jew, exactly the same as somebody who owns a Yisrael, who owns the property. So if that's the case, clearly it's saying that a goy owns a Jew. So that must mean that he owns the Jew from Maisi Yadav. And now you figure out how many years are left for the Maisi Yadayim. That would be what we would be saying. So then that means if an Oved Kochavim is even able to be Yisrael Kaina, so Oved Kochavim lo kol shekein. So obviously he's actually going to be able to buy a goy in the same way. That is our raya that we're talking about, a possibility to buy off of a goy and nonetheless be able to be kena as an eved.